So, like the title says, this is actually part one of a two-parter, which is based on something that sits at the core of, of this week's parasha, which I'm titling just in honor of the Loving Spoonful, Do You Believe in Magic? As you could see at the bottom of the page, the shiur is being given in memory of a dear friend and a teacher who, after a long, long illness, passed away this week. Rabbi Binyamin Tavori was the mashgiach in Haaretzion when I studied there, and we became fast friends, and I actually sat next to him during every one of Rav Lichtenstein's shirim kolayim, and I remember that he, because he knew Rav Lichtenstein from when he was Rosh Kol in New York, and Rav Lichtenstein would be given shir, so he would say to me, now he's going to quote this Rabbeinu Tam. And I was going to quote this Ramban. He kind of knew what was going to be coming up. It was interesting. And we had a lot of very good talks. It turned out that he had spent a few years teaching in elementary school in L.A. I didn't know him then, but we talked over some of the L.A. times also. And he was a very dear person who had a tremendous impact on a lot of people. Such a tremendous impact that when he took ill and he couldn't leave the house, there were minyanim that were created. And for the last, I don't know how many years, 10 years or so at least, every Friday night, every Shabbos Mincha, and every Motzei Shabbat, and on Chagim, there were minyanim in his house, and I used to come, and now I would come with my kids, and after the minyan, we'd come, and I'd come to the bedside and introduce him to my kids, and I always got a very big smile from him, even though it was unclear what he was able to perceive. But in any case, Binyamin Yehuda Ben Harav Tzvi, Zichro Livracha, certainly his memory will certainly be a blessing, and an inspiration for us. In the middle of this week's parasha, which the theme of this parasha actually does not fit with what the shiur is about, the theme of Parashat Shoftim, we've talked about this in the past, is leadership. And it is the way that I presented it a few years ago. It is an expansion on the Diber of Kibud Av Ve'em. And so the opening part of it is about the tribunal, and then there is the king, and then there's the role of the Kohanim, and there's also the role of the Navi. And that's what comes up in this section, but it comes through an awkward kind of introduction. So I'll read the text. Bill, you requested, so you've got the English underneath.
Yeah, I appreciate
Jason,
that. Jason,
you requested.
Before we even get going, I have a question.
You have to wait till we get started. And Jason, for your request, we have the questions at the bottom. So let's read the text. Then if you have questions, we'll ask them along the way.
So one day you'll have the answers.
And never have the answers. Ki atam ba'al ha'aretz, asher Adonai Elohecha noten lach. You're coming to the land that God's giving you. Lo tilmad la'asot ketu'avot ha'goyim ahem. You should not learn to do like all of the abominations of those nations. Now, at that point, if I were to stop and ask you, abominations of the nations that live in the land, what are we talking about? What would you assume? What would you assume that would describe? Either acts of Avodah Zarah or based on Achremot, all the sexual deviations. That's what you assume, because that's what's called toivot.
Instead of just lasso.
Right, so in other words, you shouldn't try to learn how to do those things.
Why not just, okay? Just don't do them?
Well, maybe because it's saying you are allowed to learn what they're about in order to understand them. Right? So don't learn that in order to do it. Right? That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Lo yimat sevecha, now we get examples. Ma'avir b'no uvitova ish. So there should be none of you who pass your children through the fire. It's a big dispute about what this worship was, which we typically associate with Molech. Does it mean that they actually would put children in the fire, or that they would pass them between two fires as some sort of an initiation ceremony? But that thing itself is an act of Avodah Zarah, so I get that.
Isn't that Brit Ben Avitarim? Wouldn't that be the same thing?
No. There's not two fires. There's a fire and man in between the animals, which is exactly how Britot were made in the ancient Near East. But from here on in, it takes a very different flavor. Kosem ksamim, we're going to see what all these things mean. Me'onein u'menachesh u'mechashef. These are all different kinds of divinations that people do. Chover chaver. V'sho'el ova v'yidoni. Ova v'yidoni are different kinds of necromancy. V'doresh el hametim. It's another kind of consulting with the dead. And then, after this long list, but short list, meaning there's a lot of items here, but they're all one or two words. Ki tu'avat Adonai kol osa'ele. Anybody who does these things is an abomination to God. Because of these toivot, God is disinheriting them from you, meaning that this is why they are being thrown out of the land, so that you could take the land. Now, in Vayikra, it said that they're being disinherited because of their sexual deviation, so it seems to me that both of them contributed. And then the follow-up of that is, Tamim Tiyah Im Adonai Elohecha, you should be wholehearted with God. Next week, or in the next year on this series, it's a two-part piece, we're going to look at the impact of that pasuk on understanding what all these things are. However, the big question, which is question number three on the page, it really affects all of them, is how are we to understand what these things actually accomplish? And it's a big question about magic and about the black arts, as they might be called.
Okay, so I must ask my question.
Let me just finish the question. I'll take your question. So the question we want to see is, are these things real? Such that when somebody does magic, they're actually metaphysically manipulating the universe and changing things, and the Torah forbids us to get involved, or are they not real? Okay, and Bill, what's your question?
My question is, Moses before Pharaoh and all of the magic that ensued. Moses matching the magic of the physician or the magicians of Egypt and doing them one better and two better and three better.
Okay.
Is that not magic?
No. Well, first of all, where do you find any of those things mentioned in this list? Right. Second of all, taking a stick and saying, okay, God's going to turn this stick into a serpent, it's not magic. It's saying God is doing this. Okay? This is something else. We have to see what this is to understand why that might be a problem. Okay? Now, my main focus on that, but I want to see the rest of the paragraph.
So if God is involved, magic is okay.
I didn't say that.
All right.
We have to see what the definition is.
All right.
We have to look further before we can understand it. The follow-up is, Ki ha-goyim ha-ele asher atah yoresh otam el me'onanim ve'el kosrim yishmau. These nations listen to these wizards and diviners. Ve'ata lochein atam l'cha Adonai v'acha. That's not what God gave you. And again, the question is, does that mean for that it works and they're allowed to do it, but you're not allowed to do it? Is that kind of the sense of it?
But God speaks to the prophets. He speaks to the prophets, and the prophets then become soothsayers. And the prophets go and they tell us what's going to happen.
What do you mean?
What do I mean?
I understand what I have to do with this.
It says that anybody who uses...
Let's finish the paragraph.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to finish the paragraph and then ask your questions.
Okay.
Maybe it'll be answered. So God says, and so Moshe says, this is not what God has given you. God is going to raise a prophet, just like me, from among your people. Elav Tishmael, and that's how you have to listen to. In other words, you do not seek out diviners and necromancers, etc., but God is going to give you a Navi. We're going to see why that's an answer and how that obviates the question that you asked, Bill. And by the way, this is what you asked. Because at Har Sinai, what happened? You guys did not want to continue with a direct revelation. You said to me, you be our middleman. What did God say to me way back then, 38 years ago? They said, good. Their request was an honorable request. Now, and so what did God say? So now Moshe is quoting God from Har Sinai, which we never heard about, saying, I will raise a Navi like you, I'll put my words in his mouth, and he'll tell them what I'm commanding. If somebody does not listen, then I'm going to demand that I'm going to hold them accountable. In other words, if I speak through a prophet and the prophet delivers the word and somebody ignores the word, then I will hold them accountable, because after all, that's what you asked for. What you asked for was, we want a Navi instead of God directly. So fine, that's what you got. Now that means that if the Navi says something, you have to accept it as if I'm saying it. And if you don't do it, then you are violating my words. Let's say that there's a Navi who either makes stuff up or else gives prophecy, and he says the prophecy is in the name of Avodah Zarah, and he'll die. And then, how do we know if God said it or not? And here, the presentation, which is different in other places. What did Hashem say? Let's say he predicts something to happen, it doesn't happen, then God did not speak through him, etc. What that means is a whole other piece about the difference between Navi Sheker, Navi B'Shem, Avodah Zarah, etc. But why is a Navi here? Because let's go back and say, what are all of these other divinations about? Meaning, why do people use divination? Why do people use horoscopes? Why do people use palm readers? Why do people use signs and portents? All of that. What are they using for? One purpose. Trying to gain the information that's inaccessible to them.
But are you separating that information from things that God says?
No, I'm just saying they're trying to get information that's inaccessible to them about the future, about where grandma hid her silverware, whatever it might be. They're trying to get information that's unavailable to them through the normal channels.
Right.
And they're using these devices. So God says, if I want to let you know something, I'll let you know.
Through a Navi.
Through a Navi. But you can't try to access that information, or shall we say differently, you may not, and that's the difference, try to access that information through these vehicles. Right? And that is...
Through the Navi, you could.
But you don't come to the Navi and ask.
You don't go to the Navi.
Which, by the way, seems to be problematic in light of Shaul's first meeting with Shmuel. Why did Shaul meet Shmuel? Because Shaul was looking for his father's donkeys, and the kid said, there's an Ish Elohim, a Roel, let's go to him and he'll tell us where the donkeys are. Which sounds exactly like this, getting information about something we don't know about from a Roel. Or when Rivka's pregnant, she doesn't know what's going on, she goes to find out what the information is. So we can't put it in such stark lines and saying that man is limited to being only a recipient, and when God wants to tell him something, telling him. God can ask, man can ask God and say, please tell me what's going on, and maybe God will tell him through a Navi. But to use these devices to try to do it is forbidden.
But I'm confused.
And Tamim Tiyah, that line that's at the end of the first parasha, Pasuk Yud Gimel, seems to be the defining piece, which is to be wholehearted with God. As we'll see in the next Shia, not today, in the next Shia, the way the Ramban understands it is, the mitzvah is to have absolute loyalty and trust in God, that whatever God's got in mind and God planned is good, and not to try to get the information unless God wants to give you the information. Okay? Now,
how does that connect to... But why is he connecting that to the Har Sinai when we said we don't want to hear it directly?
Because he's saying that the whole idea of a Navi was... What?
It's an intermediary.
It was an intermediary that you requested.
But that was a one-time event, which was...
No, it wasn't a one-time event. They said, we no longer want to see, which means the Har Sinai...
We don't want to hear anything.
Har Sinai may have indicated to the people that from here on in, God's going to talk to them every once in a while and give them mitzvot. And they said, we don't want that. We can't stand that. So we have to have an intermediary. And that's what plays out.
But
now,
you don't have him responding at that point saying that's what's going to happen.
Correct. But he's telling us now that that's what God said to him then. Uh-huh. We have other things that we find out in Dvarim were said in the first year that we don't hear about until now, including things with Diego and things with at Mount Har Sinai especially, that we did not hear about, including things with the Meraglim and other things that are added in Dvarim or fleshed out in Dvarim. So now, you see what the three questions are. I'll just clarify them. Why did Torah prohibit involvement with the occult at all? Right? Now, from reading this, it would sound like the occult is a form of Avodah Zarah. Because, don't learn what the practices are. These are the practices that got them killed, thrown out of the land. These are called Toevot. The opposite of being this way is to be wholehearted with God. It sounds like this is idolatry. But the reality is that it's not idolatry.
Right.
It's not idolatry.
That's the big thing about finding out the future.
Well, but it's more. There's something more than that. It's not idolatry, and I'll explain why. Now, that goes to question two, since it's not idolatry, and I'll explain why that is the case. Why does the Torah equate it to Avodah Zarah? So let's talk about what the occult's about. What is the occult about, and really, what is pagan practice about?
But where's Avodah Zarah in here?
What?
Where do you see the equation to Avodah Zarah?
It says that these are called Toevot, which is a word used only for Avodah Zarah and sexual deviations.
Okay.
And you certainly can't put it in the sexual deviation thing.
Well, again, it'd be a third category.
And because we don't have any other model for that. And third is, it says, because, and this is the reason that the nations are being thrown out. Also, Lotum Adasat, and the first example one is one that is Avodah Zarah, which is Molech. Right? So question is, why are these things being sort of, even if you don't want to say they're equated to Avodah Zarah, they're thrown into the same box as Avodah Zarah. Okay. What's so wrong with them? So we have to understand something about how pagan thinking works and understand why this really is not Avodah Zarah at all. What does Avodah Zarah mean? Let's just be clear, and we'll see why this is not Avodah Zarah. What does Avodah Zarah mean?
It's result-oriented.
No, what's Avodah Zarah mean? It means foreign worship. I'm worshiping a different god. I'm coming up to Zeus and saying, Zeus, please send rain. I'm coming up to Mercury and saying, Mercury, please get this message quickly. Whatever it is.
Does it right? have to be multiple?
What?
Does it have to be multiple?
No, Avodah Zarah means foreign worship. It means I'm going to any deity besides Hashem and relating to it as a deity. Worshiping it, requesting something, giving gratitude, anything relational where I'm accepting its reality, its power, and my devotion. That's Avodah Zarah. So if I burn some incense and sit in front of a statue of Buddha and chant whatever it is I'm chanting, that's Avodah Zarah. I'm worshiping a different god, however we understand Buddhism, right? Notice that here, none of that is happening. What is happening is a person is, for instance, closing his eyes, chanting certain things, and either supposedly or really summoning up the spirit of a dead person and communicating with the dead person. There's no worship of Avodah Zarah, no worship of another god in that. A person is saying, oh, well, today is this day of the month, and when you woke up it was raining, and your car didn't start for the first time, so therefore you should not go to business. Now don't try to make that deal. There's no Avodah Zarah there. There's no mention of any other god there. There's no worship there. So what's with these things?
You're putting your faith into something other than God.
So are you putting your faith into something other than God? Maybe. So what Abe is saying is that Avodah Zarah isn't just the affirmative worship of a different deity, but it's putting your faith into something that's besides God. I mean, like doctors or mathematicians or, right? So where are we going to draw the line? So hard science, yes, and soft science, not, occult, not, where we draw the line, kind of difficult. But there's something else about the mechanics of how this stuff works. In pagan thinking, and this is well documented, in pagan thinking, or much of pagan thinking, first of all, paganism is very tolerant. There are multiple gods, and pagans are, for the most part, accepting, not just respectful and tolerant, accepting of multiple gods. And if they come into a different town, they'll offer an offering or burn incense or whatever it is to the local god, because that's what you got to do. And all of these gods who are in charge of different things, they might be in charge of territory, or they might be in charge of parts of life, like birth, sustenance, things of that sort. And your job is, from one perspective, to propitiate the gods, so you want to feed them things and make them happy so that they don't get ticked off at you, but at the core of it is something much deeper, which is that belief that there are unseen forces that are above that, that control the gods. And that if you use the right device, meaning the right incantation on the right day, in the right place, with the right dance, and the right clothes, and whatever it might be, you can, get this, force the forces to force the gods to do your bidding. Now that's a critical piece because it means that your stand as an ethical or religious person is meaningless. What matters is the device, the mechanics. So that if you, and notice, you see this in the Bilam story. What does Balak say to Bilam? That didn't work. Let's go to another place where we can see from a different angle. Maybe it'll work there. As if to say, it's all about mechanics. If we can get you to a place and offer up offerings and do it at the right time and the right angle, then maybe it'll work and we get God to curse his people. And of course, God's answer is, no, these are my people. I'm not going to curse you. You can't do anything about it. But the pagan thinking is that you can control all this stuff. So what's the problem here? The problem here is not Avodah Zarah in the sense of worshipping another god. In a sense, it's even more heinous. It is
controlling.
You are believing that you are a god. Because what the a core of this part of pagan thinking is that it's anthropocentric. You think about it, our world ideally, our lives ideally, are theocentric. We're centered around God. When God speaks, we listen. When God commands, we obey. And so we see ourselves as focused around that God command. Pagan thinking is actually anthropocentric in saying, I can direct things because if I have the right mojo, I can make the forces force the gods to do my bidding. It's a very different way of looking at it. Now, that's part one, and that's kind of what's cutting underneath all of that. Now, let's turn the page, and here, we're not going to read all of this, obviously, but the Rambam in Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchot Avodah Zarah presents this entire piece. And we're going to look at the Rambam's perspective today in a few minutes. I'm going to highlight just a few things along the way. And then we're going to see a different perspective next week. The Rambam devotes an entire chapter to all of the occult practices. And he starts it as follows. Ein hochin b'chukot ha'ovdei kochavim v'lo medamin lahen. We're not allowed to follow their practices or imitate them. And then he goes on to say, we're not allowed to dress like they dress, and to take haircuts like they take, etc., etc. You were supposed to be different in our deportment, etc. Now, what would the Rambam say about a society, and this is where the Meiri kind of comes in, sort of creates a whole new stream. What would the Rambam say about a society in which the people in the society are all monotheists who are ethical, nice people, for the most part, with a few criminals in there, and who all dress in a normal fashion, and there's nothing about their dress that is either worshipful or lascivious. Is it okay to dress like them? And by the way, the broad approach of halacha has been yes. And that's why we dress like normal people in the street, right? We don't dress in overly revealing clothing or anything inappropriate. We also don't dress like the local bishop, but we dress like local business, you know, people of normal dignity. if you look at halacha dalad, and this is kind of where it gets kicking, ein menachashin ka'akum. We're not allowed to do nichush. That's one of the things on our list, like the goyim. Now notice, that becomes the strain here. The strain throughout the entire parak is to not these do these things like they do them. That doesn't mean you could do them in a different way. It means don't do these things because this is part of what their whole behavior system is. Right? Now, he explains what nichush is. We're going to look at some of the definitions here. All right? Ketzan hu anachash in dalet. So on elu shomrim ho'il v'nafla pitimi pi on afal makli miyadi eni olech l'makom ploni ayom. I was planning a trip today. I woke up in the morning and I made my toast and I buttered it on the wrong side. Or I picked it up and it fell. So you know what? I'm not going to take the trip. Right? So that's called divination because you're using things that have happened to you to help determine how you should behave. All right. In the next line, it says, "V'chein elu sheshomim tziftzu fa'of." For me, yekach v'lo yekach. People who hear a particular bird whistling, and it says, as a result, "Oh, this is going to happen, or that's going to happen." Right? It's better to behave this way, but that way. That's nichush. Okay. Take a look at vav. Ezu kosem. What's kosem? Zel sem ma'asem mishar ma'asir kadei shi'ishom v'tifanem machshavto. So a person goes into some sort of a trance, generates a trance, and starts prognosticating about things that are going to happen. Right, things that are going to happen, not going to happen. And then he says in Allah Chazayin, you're not allowed to engage in it or to petition a kosem to tell you what's going on. What's me'onen? This is exactly a horoscope. Mionen is from the word ona, a season. To say, oh, this is a bad day to do it. It's the Friday the 13th. Your house is rising in Aquarius. You know, it's a Sunday, whatever. It's not good to do these things.
Well, we know Tuesday's a good day. And what about the expression, kanahara?
Well, you're going in two different directions. All right? When you said about Tuesday, what's about Tuesday?
Well, it's a good luck day.
No, it's not.
Considered.
I don't know who says that, right? If you want to say,
Wednesday.
What?
Tuesday in the Jewish tradition.
You mean the day you're supposed to get married?
Good, good. So good. So very good. So the Mishnah in Ketubot says that a girl should get married on a Wednesday. And the Gemara gives the reason. What's the reason? Because in case he finds something untoward, the Beit Din will be available the next morning. Right?
Okay.
Okay. Now it says, what about an almanah where that's not the case? So we say she should get married on Thursday night. And what's the reason for that? Because he's not going to give as much attention to his almanah, and therefore he won't work Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos. She'll get her 3 days of simcha. There's very pragmatic reasons for these things. Now, are there also heebie-jeebie reasons that are given in some places, including some reasons that are more mystical that might be presented in the Gemara? Yeah, there are. But the question is that the reason for that law? Or is that once the law is in place, then we can find maybe other associations? Okay? We'll get to Ayin Hara maybe next week.
Google doesn't have a lucky day, I checked.
All right. Now, Asur La'onein. Asur La'onein, which means you're not allowed to say that, oh, today is, you know, the 15th of the month. And now, that doesn't mean if you say every month on the 15th, I get these terrible headaches because it's exactly 2 weeks between Rosh Chodesh and I shouldn't do it. I mean, that's a physical thing. You've got to find out why you're getting headaches. But to say it's the 15th of the month and therefore I'm not going to go open up a new store or I'm not going to invest, that's called me'onein. Because what is it you believe? Why are you doing that? What are you believing? You're believing that the fates are controlling what's going to happen, and doing it on an inauspicious day will mean it'll end up bad. Now, I know what you're going to say, which is, well, wait a second, what about the Gemara that says that if you have a court date against a non-Jew during Av, you should try to push it off to Adar? The Rambam doesn't mention that at all. The Rambam is aware that there are streams in Chazal that disagree with this position, and he just...
Talk about the concept of Mazal.
Yes, the Rambam's not Goris Mazal at all. Right, yeah. Except maybe as something very different than that. Now, I'll take you to.
If it's a lot of detail, what's ultimately the point?
I'll show you. I'm gonna because he's going through everything that's in the psukim. All the psukim is going through step by step what they all mean. Look at Yod Gimel. Ezu Doreshal Hamitim. What's that? Seeking out the dead. People who would starve themselves, and then they'd go sleep in the boneyard. So in other words, the guy says, what? Yeah, except they would do it by, and they'd go sleep in the graveyard, and they would starve themselves, by the way, which is we're familiar with from Native American customs, of starving themselves and then going out and having a vision, right? Well, of course, if you starve yourself and you go out in the hot sun, you're going to have a vision. Right? So, and he's made a request, he's going to get the answer to the request. And by the way, there's a famous story at the beginning of the third parak of Brachot about a guy who gives money to, a very poor guy who gives some money in stock of Erev Rosh Hashanah. His wife gets really angry with him, and he goes and sleeps in the boneyard because she throws him out of the house, and he hears two spirits talking, and they start saying, oh, I found out this is going to happen this year, and he invests, and he does very well, and it's a wild story. The question is, what do you do with the story? There's people who put on special clothes and burn a special incense. They sleep alone. So that the dead, particularly the dead person, will come. Right? And that, and if you do any of those things, you get makot for doresh al hametim. Now, asur lishol bal ovo bal yidoni. There's exactly a medium. Shinemar, etc. etc. Now, Mechashef. Talks about Mechashef. It's somebody who sets up hexes by doing Masek Shafim. And the one I really want to show you is Tet Zayin. Right? You got to follow this. Tet Zayin is very, very big. The Rambam says the following. Udvarim ha'elu. Kulan divrei sheker vechazav. The Rambam says this entire system, everything I just described for you, is lies and deceit. Hain vehain shitu mahen of dekochav makamonim legoy aratzot kadeshin hagu acharian. And these are all things that the early priests of the cults would do in order to get everybody to follow them. Vehain ra'ui liYisrael. Now watch what he says, and this is now answering one of the questions: why did the Torah prohibit this? It's inappropriate for Yisrael. Shehem chachamim mechukamim. Who are we?
The smartest.
Lehem shlimashech behavalim elu, to follow this nonsense, v'lo la'alot alev sheish to alafayna, not to consider at all that there's any value to it whatsoever.
You're saying we're too smart for this?
It's not saying we're too smart. It's inappropriate for Am Yisrael, whose job is to be enlightened and smart, to follow such nonsense. Shenamar, he quotes the pasuk in Bilam, Kilo nachash b'Yakov lo kesem b'Yisrael. V'nemar ki agoyim ha'ela sh'ata yoresh otayim amonim lo kosmim yishmau v'ata lo chen. That's in our passage. These nations that you're coming to, they, seances, they're not, that's not what God gave you. God gave you an avi. And then he says, "Kol ha'ma'amin b'dvarim ha'elu." Anybody who believes that these things are real, ketzei b'ayin, u'mechashev b'libo shein emet. He thinks that these and similar things are real. V'dvar chokhmah, and these are actually a science, as it were. Aval ha'Torah asartan, but the Torah just said you're not allowed to do it. And on ela min haschalim, this person's an idiot. U'mechasrei ha'dat, has no understanding. V'chal anashim v'aktanim shein datan shlema. He's another person who just has no understanding.
You mean if you believe in this?
If you believe that it, no, if you believe that it's true, but the Torah just forbade it. And you don't do it. And you don't do it because you say, of course, seances work.
So
and of course, palm readings work. And of course, horoscopes are real and everything else. But I'm not allowed to do them. And you stay away from them. The Torah says you're an idiot. The Rambam says, hold on a second. The Rambam says you're an idiot. Aval ba'alei chokhma utmimei hadat, people of wisdom and knowledge, Yedum b'ra'ayot b'ruot shekol elu advarim sha'asara Torah enam divrei chokhma ala tohu v'hevel. All these things the Torah forbade are not wisdom, they're all nonsense. Shin shechu b'an chasrei adat v'nitshu kol darchei emet b'golan. And people abandon all manners of truth because of this stuff. Hezeh amra Torah k'shi zira al kol elu afalim tamim tiyeh ma'ashem alokachai. So that's why the Torah concludes all these prohibitions with the phrase tamim tiyeh. In other words, it's saying, you should be wholehearted, meaning you should stay focused on the path of wisdom. This is all nonsense. This is all ridiculous. Anybody who believes in this stuff is a fool. And anybody who believes that this stuff is true and practical, but you're just not allowed to do it, he said, is a fool. Rather, you have to understand the Torah forbade it because it's nonsense. Which means that the Torah is taking a look at practices that were common in its day, and by the way, common till today. You just drive down any major street, and how many palm reading stores and psychics do you have? You ever wonder why a psychic asks for your credit card number? Anyhow,
because they're not card readers, they're just psychics.
You see how much this is still prevalent, and the Torah is saying you have to avoid all of this nonsense. I'm not saying what I'm saying.
No,
what the Rambam says. The Rambam says none of this stuff is real. None of this stuff is real.
Hold on a second. Yeah.
So, and the angle of Avodah Zarah that's involved here, of course, is not because you are worshiping a foreign god when you're doing it, but you're actually assuming the mantle of a power that's fake.
You mean like the Rebbe?
What? I didn't say anything.
Well,
you want to say whatever you want to say.
Powers. People
I don't,
came to him, asked questions.
What does powers mean? What does powers mean?
Well, look.
Somebody has insight.
I'm not going there.
Well, Bill, I'm not going there. Not going there. I'm not taking any.
Some people are more insightful than others. Some people are more intuitive than others.
Right.
And some people actually have psychic abilities of a certain sort.
Well, that's where I would draw the line.
Yeah.
That's where I would draw the line. Psychic ability is a different story.
I wouldn't say they're infallible. If
you're psychic, then you're infallible. Either you have the information or you don't have the information.
How does Rambam deal with the witches of Endor with Sha'ul?
Right, so that's something that we have to speak about. However, just to put a little touch on it, we did the Balat of years ago here.
Right.
We didn't raise anybody, but we did it. And in the story, in the story of Balat Ov, there is a huge machloket among the commentaries about the piece between basically the Gaonim and the Rishonim. The Gaonim took the position, for the most part, the ones we know of, that this whole thing doesn't work. Rav Sadia Gaon said, it doesn't work, but Hashem made a nes to revive and resurrect, by the way, Shmuel, so he could talk to Shaul. Not revive his spirit, but resurrect his body. That's Rav Sadia. And Rav Shmuel ben Chafni Gaon says the whole thing was a ruse, it was all just blowing smoke, right, and that none of it's real. Whereas the Rishonim, for the most part, took the position, that's what we're going to look at next week, took the position that it was real, that it really happened, and No, and the Rambam, by the way, even though he's living in time, they're showing the Rambam is following in the direction of the Gaonim. There's other people after the Rambam, like the Levi ben Gershom, who also follow that position. People till today who follow that position. We're going to take a look next week at a different approach to understanding this, but I want you to see the Rambam. The Rambam's take, the Rambam's take on this entire list is all of these things are nonsense. They were all vehicles that the pagan priests used to try to con their members into following them and to maintain power over them. And the Torah prohibited it because the Torah doesn't want you to be stupid, basically.
How much of